From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, dozens of Navy SEALs sue the Biden administration. We honor our veterans, and we look forward to a prayer meeting for life. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and Reagan Republican. On Thursday of this week, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins was joined by Representative Greg Murphy of North Carolina to talk about President Biden's Build Back Better proposal, as well as the COVID shot mandate. Here's Tony Perkins.
Congressman, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Tony. Good afternoon.
Let me just ask you first, as a member of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, how have you seen our care of veterans? What's the status of that under this administration?
Well, Tony, I think it's fair. I give it a C plus, maybe, as we're putting forth our efforts. You know, I am honored to represent a district that has the sixth most veterans in the country, about 95,000. And being a physician of 30 years, obviously those two priorities are very big ones to me. It's sad that at the beginning of this administration, they put a priority of having transgender surgery over one of my priorities in healthcare, and that's the treatment of post-traumatic stress disorder and traumatic brain injury. You know, you look at the number of suicides that are going on in our veterans every day, you know, 17 a day. And that number's climbing. And the number of overdose deaths in our veterans, which is actually 65% higher than in the general population. That's where we need to be putting our energies, not into gender reassignment surgery or transgender surgery. It's just, you know, in my opinion, they started off with a very, very poor priority list. And unfortunately, I think that's continuing today.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. As I've spoken to some of your colleagues and others that are involved in veteran care and veterans themselves, those who in particular served in Afghanistan after the debacle of the retreat from Afghanistan, we've seen kind of a spike in veterans dealing with emotional issues. Is the Veterans Affairs Department, are they responding to this?
Well, very interesting, Tony, because I sent a letter to the chair of our Veterans Affairs Committee, a Democrat, and asking him to convene a meeting specifically to deal with that, and basically did not get a response. That's very, very unfortunate, because we had veterans in our community that just recently served in Afghanistan. They knew people who were being left behind. And then we had veterans from other armed services that had served in previous conflicts that their emotions ranged from embarrassment to out shock to utter disgust about the way that the Biden administration withdrew from Afghanistan. And the fact that, you know, Biden said we would not leave anybody behind, but in fact he did. And we know that for a fact. We know that there's still hundreds of Americans today still left behind enemy lines.
Yeah, people don't realize the impact that has emotionally on members of the military who served and lost colleagues. They lost fellow Marines and soldiers in those battles, and then to see the United States pull out the way that they did, it opens up a lot of those wounds, oftentimes that have been undealt with, and so it is critical. It's a part of it. The Veterans Affairs is a part of that. Obviously, the faith community has to step in as well. I will say this on behalf of the Veterans Affairs, that at least the director there has just given approval to all religious exemption requests for those that work within the department who have had concerns about the COVID vaccine mandate. So that's at least there's one department within the federal government that is recognizing these religious exemption requests.
Yeah, at least for now. You know, it's sad, Tony, that this administration and other administrations, and I think this is, you know, you and I could talk about this for hours, that the very foundation, the Judeo-Christian foundation of this nation is being pushed aside. And that's why we have such moral relativism, not only in civilian life, but in governmental life. And it's good to see every pocket now and then of some sensibility coming from at least one aspect of government. I'm not overly optimistic that that will continue because of the federal mandates now in some certain aspects in military forces, the SEAL team. For example, they've had problems with this mandate. And let me just make very clear, and I'll just take a quick aside. I'm a physician. I've studied the literature. I believe people should be vaccinated. But when we push the government over the individual and you get involved in the doctor-patient relationship, which I believe is a sacred relationship, and you make it between government and citizen, I believe that the government has vastly overreached its responsibility and its duty for that matter.
Well, since you brought that up, let me ask you this question, Dr. Murphy. With 10 states have now filed suit as of yesterday against the mandate for any medical institution or entity that receives Medicaid or Medicare funding. That covers about 17 million healthcare workers. In part, the suit says this is going to create dire circumstances, especially in rural America, the fact that the reality is we already have a shortage. What's your view on that?
Well, Tony, I thought that was coming because prior to this, with the flu vaccine, our institution, our medical institution, which is a very large hospital, close to 1,000 beds, has always mandated the flu vaccine, and everybody's done that. However, this is an entirely different set of circumstances. And prior to the federal edict last week, they allowed for religious exemptions, and they actually also allowed for natural immunity. But now the fact that they are ignoring the science of natural immunity is exceedingly troublesome. You know, we are in a dire shortage. We have close to 1,000 beds in our hospital, but at any point in time, they're, 100 or 200 closed because we don't have enough nurses. And now we're going to squash out 20% of those who say they just don't want it. They're young, oftentimes female, and are concerned about, which I have to disagree with, but that still is their concern about the vaccine. It's just, it's sadly that sometimes the other side of the aisle does not think past their emotions and actually think about consequences. We're going to actually cause people, kicking them out of their jobs, to lose their jobs, lose their health care, throw them into poverty. And we know that one of the quote words of social determinants of health, things that determine somebody's health, welfare, and morbidity and mortality is poverty itself. So we're actually, in my opinion, actually going to cause more distress for this nation in a population that oftentimes has minimal risk from this virus and cause them much more damage than we actually produce good.
Do you think this is an unintentional consequence that they really didn't think through this? Or is this another effort to create a crisis in our healthcare to give the government more control over it?
Well, it's probably a little bit of both, Tony, to be very honest with you. I don't believe they actually think through their consequences of what they do. Look at the inflation. Look at some of the other issues we can talk about. I think they base things, and this is oftentimes a liberal progressive mantra, is they think things emotionally rather than they think about the secondary, tertiary, quaternary consequences. Is this government overreach? Yes, the Biden administration has shown that it cares more about a top-bottom approach rather than an individual rights approach than anything. They've shown that in so many different sectors here, and this, and pushing it into the healthcare, again, as a physician who advocates for vaccination, is just another example of what they do.
Congressman, I know you're going to have to run in just a minute. We just got a couple minutes with you, but you made reference to the inflation issue. I want to play a quick clip of the president's chief of staff and what he had to say on MSNBC about the president's plan. Play clip number three, please.
I understand that voters are frustrated. We inherited a mess from Donald Trump. We inherited 4,000 people a day dying from COVID. We inherited only 50,000 jobs being created a month. Giant supply chain problems, all these problems. I'm proud of the progress we've made in these 10 months, but I totally respect the view of the voters that we haven't made enough progress yet, that we haven't gotten enough done yet.
We got a minute left. I'll give you a quick response to the president's chief of staff.
I'll just say two words. That's tone deaf. Tone deaf. They are totally tone deaf to the facts of what they have caused. I mean, good Lord. And the fact that they've caused so many of these self-inflicted crises, inflation, defund the police, the border crisis, they are tone deaf to not only facts, but more importantly, they're tone deaf to the needs and wants of the American people. And so, they're living in a fantasy land, and the American people now, truly, as was evidenced in Virginia, understand that and are fighting back.
Yeah, I have more confidence in the American people than I do the Biden administration, to tell the truth. Yeah. Congressman, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for being with us, Greg.
Thank you so much, Tony. God bless. Have a good day.
All right, Congressman Greg Murphy of North Carolina. Look, there's so much to talk about here, but I'll just, these guys don't get it. When you look at the president's chief of staff saying that the American people, or the people in Virginia, responded in the election rejecting Democratic policies by Terry McAuliffe because they didn't have enough Democratic policies from Joe Biden. Tone deaf. That's, as Congressman Murphy said, I don't think it's tone deaf. I think they're just plain deaf. Can't hear at all. All right. When we come back, we're going to be joined by our own Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch right after this.
Have you ever tried to read the Bible daily, but struggled to get in a groove? It can be hard, especially if you don't know where to start, or how to understand and apply what you've read. Or maybe it's just that doing it alone has made it too easy to give up. Well, let me encourage you. You don't have to do this daily discipline alone. You can join Family Research Council's Stand on the Word 2-year Bible reading plan. Let's stay grounded in God's truth and grow closer to God together. Sign up today by visiting frc.org/Bible.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Good to have you with us on this Veterans Day. The website, tonyperkins.com. All right, today we pause to reflect the huge debt of gratitude that we owe to veterans for being a part of defending freedom. They have won and preserved our freedoms. And if you come across a veteran today, I would certainly encourage you to take a moment and thank them for their service. I remember when I first joined the Marine Corps post-Vietnam, I served with a lot of guys who had been in Vietnam. And in fact, today, guys who served in Vietnam are still wrestling with the way they were treated when they came home. It's encouraging to see how we're treating veterans today, but it's not always been that way. So I encourage you to take a moment to thank those who have served in our nation's military. And joining us now to talk more about this is FRC's own vice president, executive vice president. He's a founding member of the Army's Elite Delta Force, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. General, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you, Tony. It's really good to be back on this special day.
And thank you, sir, for your 36 and a half years of service in the nation's military in the United States Army. Let me just start with kind of on the personal side of this. You know, for those in our audience that may not know your story, what initially led you to join the Army?
Yeah, that's a good question. I grew up in rural North Carolina, and my dad was one of six boys. And five of those boys went off to World War II, and my dad was the only one that was wounded. But they served, and at family gatherings, they would talk about their time in the military. They would talk about the things that they did, they saw, and the people that were so special to them. And as a result of that, I just sort of decided that it was an expectation by my dad and the other members of the family that I should serve the nation, even if it was only for, you know, one tour or one enlistment or whatever. So I said, I'm going in the military as soon as I'm eligible. And I did, right out of Virginia Tech.
And when you went in, you caught the tail end of Vietnam. I went in the early 80s, so it was over. However, the military has not always been treated, our military veterans have not always been treated well. As you heard me say, I recall serving a lot of Vietnam veterans who really were, they were not treated well when they came home. So you've seen both the good and the bad of how we've treated our veterans.
Yeah, what a contrast, Tony. What an absolute contrast between getting off the airplane in San Francisco, coming out of Vietnam and being spat on and ridiculed and called baby killers. And I mean, that was the plight of our Vietnam veterans, and it cut scars very deeply into those people because they left a nation that no longer existed when they came home. And it was heartbreaking for them, and many of them are still carrying those scars. But then you go to how they've been treated today. As you know, for example, I'm getting ready to get on an airplane here in a minute, and I guarantee you, if there's anybody on that airplane that the crew is aware of that they are military, they will call their name, and the airplane will applaud. So America learned something from the way we treated the Vietnam veterans. It was a national disgrace, and now I think we have done much better. And you can't make up for what we did as a nation in Vietnam during the Vietnam era regarding our veterans. But you can certainly make sure that no future generation has to endure that. And I think that it's a testament for who we are as a nation. John Kennedy says you'll know the character of a nation by the way it treats its veterans.
And it certainly is encouraging. It's one of the positive points that we look at when we look at our military. Unfortunately, when we look at what's happening in our military with the social engineering, and yesterday I made reference to this, about three dozen Navy SEALs have had to file a lawsuit against the Biden administration for refusing to even consider their religious exemption request over this COVID vaccine or shot mandate. There's a lot of problems within the military, the way it's being, I guess, engineered socially through these Democratic administrations.
That's right, Tony. And there are, you know, they say, well, 80% of the military is indoctrinated, is vaccinated, sorry. But what they don't tell you is that we bullied about half of those. We bullied them into taking this vaccination. Even those that had already had COVID, we bullied them. I can tell you story after story, Tony, of people that have reached out to me and said I was given 1 hour to make a decision as to whether I was going to start out processing of the military or whether I was going to take that vaccine and be allowed to stay in. And I got a family, and I didn't know what else to do, so I took the vaccination. It is bullying. It is bullying, right. And this president needs to be held accountable.
Well, even in the lawsuit that the Navy SEALs filed, they stated that they were told by the Navy's COVID Consolidated Disposition Authority that if they refuse the vaccine, the Navy may seek to recover from each service member the amount of money that had been spent on their training, which could have been $1 million or more. I mean, you talk about bullying, that's bullying right there.
Yeah, or give them a dishonorable discharge, which means they're barely even a citizen of the United States anymore. Can't vote, can't own a gun. And I'll tell you, that is Gestapo tactics. That's Joseph Stalin.
Right.
I tell you, Tony, it upsets me so much. And I'm glad these SEALs are fighting back. God bless them. I've become a big advocate for the SEALs because they had the courage to stand and be counted. And I hope that this winds up in the Supreme Court and we get a resolution on this that goes in the favor of military readiness and the people that are serving.
Well, there are some big problems in our nation's military, and I think to correct them, it's going to require an election and a change of administrations that realize the military is there, as you often say, to fight and win wars. It's not there as a laboratory for their social experimentation. General Jerry Boykin, always great to talk with you. Safe travels today.
Thanks, Tony, and thanks for your service as well.
Thank you. All right, in less than a month, U.S. Supreme Court will be hearing the most consequential abortion case in a generation. December the 1st, Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization will get their day in court. We're going to have a prayer day before then. We're going to talk about it next. Don't go away.
More than ever before, Christians need to be grounded in the truth of God's Word and be prepared to articulate them in a winsome manner. That is why Family Research Council has launched the Center for Biblical Worldview. By applying the Bible and the historical teachings of the church to a wide range of relevant issues, including voting, religious liberty, abortion, marriage, and sexuality, the experts at the center have provided resources to help Christians live by a biblical worldview. To understand why Scripture must be authoritative and to equip believers to advance and defend the faith in the workplace, in schools, in their communities, and in the public square. Access free resources like the Biblical Worldview series at frc.org/worldview. To get highlights of the latest work of the Worldview Fellows, including their latest blogs, op-eds, interviews, and publications, sign up at frc.org/subscriptions.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. So good to have you with us on this Veterans Day. The website, TonyPerkins.com. In less than a month, the U.S. Supreme Court will be hearing what I believe is one of the most important cases in, you know, could be a century. On December the 1st, the case is called Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization. Now, this comes out of the state of Mississippi. Mississippi passed a law that bans most abortions after 15 weeks. Now, this is, legally speaking, it is a direct challenge of the 1973 Roe versus Wade Supreme Court decision that has resulted in the loss of 60 million unborn lives, the taking of 60 million unborn babies, their lives, through abortion. Now, the church has been praying, repenting for abortion, but now, really for the first time in 48 years, before the Supreme Court will be a case that many believe, given the makeup of the Supreme Court, could upend Roe v. Wade and send this issue of abortion back to the states, where already states have in place trigger mechanism, many states, that would outlaw abortion if given the opportunity by the court. In anticipation of this significant court case, on November the 28th, we will be joining with folks from border to border, coast to coast, to pray for the court, pray for those arguing before the court, pray for this issue, pray for our nation. We will be having a prayer gathering, Pray Together for Life. We will be in Jackson, Mississippi, at New Horizon Church, where our gracious host, Bishop Ronnie Crudup, is the senior pastor and the founder of the church, and he joins me now to talk more about this event on November the 28th. Bishop, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm honored to be here.
Well, thank you for being willing to host us there in Jackson, Mississippi. In fact, we've already been down there. We had a luncheon for pastors and pro-life leaders, and it was a phenomenal event, a very diverse gathering. This issue, when you look at the church community across ethnic lines, across denominational lines, even across political lines, they're ready to deal with this issue, are they not?
I believe they are. One of the things that I've said to people over and over again, that particularly with the African-American church is predominantly pro-life. You know, sometimes they don't get an opportunity to say that much as maybe they should. But that meeting that we had was a good indicator of that.
Well, it should be. When you look at the numbers don't lie, the African-American community has been disproportionately affected by abortion. When you look at entities like Planned Parenthood and others, they set up their clinics in minority communities. I mean, it is time for the nation to hear, I believe, from the African-American community on this issue of abortion. And while this isn't a rally, this isn't anything other than a prayer meeting, but it will be a joining together of Black, white, Hispanic, of conservative, you know, maybe not so conservative, but we're coming together on one issue and we're finding unity on this issue of life.
Well, I think that's because, you know, people, they understand that their silence has, of course, affected this. They've been complicit in their silence, and now is an opportunity, maybe like we have not seen in a long, long time, to affect change in this. And so I believe that that has pulled together a coalition of church folk, denominational folk, that also may be unprecedented that in the past.
Yeah, I think you're right. Let me ask you this, Bishop, as a pastor, as a spiritual leader, the devaluing of human life that we've seen through abortion, do you think that's had broader implications for our society?
Oh, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. I think when you devalue the life in the womb, you devalue life across the board. And we certainly have experienced that in the African-American community. Once again, when you devalue life, it doesn't just stay at the womb. It affects people all across life. And so this is something, as we seek to change violent circumstances in the African-American community, this is one of the places that we affect that change.
One final question for you. We're almost out of time, Bishop. Is the church ready for the court to upend Roe v. Wade and send this issue back to the states?
I believe it is. I absolutely believe it is. And I want to say that, for me, this happening because of something that comes out of Mississippi. Once again, for me, God, okay, as well as quite ironic. And so we believe that change starts in Mississippi.
Well, and we pray that it begins in Mississippi as we gather on November the 28th. Bishop, I want to thank you for hosting that event, and I want to thank you for joining us today. Thank you for your leadership.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and we encourage everybody to come out and be with us at New Horizon on this date.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. You can find information about how you can join the Pray Together for Life event at praytogetherforlife.com or over at tonyperkins.com. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us. I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.